Dr. Kingsnag, could you tell me a little bit about the first class you went to at UBC in 1915?
Yes, the first class that I went to was in one of the old sheds out in the Fairview site, and it was a class in physics, subject about which I knew nothing to begin with and very little more at the end of the first year.
Could you sort of delineate your period, your student days at the university for me? You say that it was originally McGill University of Princeton.
Yes, up until 1915, the only university work being done in British Columbia was done in an institution which was in effect a branch of McGill. It was called McGill in BC. In 1915, the University of British Columbia began as an entity on its own, and I was fortunate in being one of the students who entered UBC in that year.
And then what happened during your, what was the feeling like at university? What was the spirit like?
Well, it was a very interesting time because the university had only a limited amount of money, and there was a real question as to whether it should be put into buildings or whether concentration should be on the obtaining of staff. And fortunately, the government had enough sense to concentrate on staff. The result was that we had in UBC in the early days a very good professorial staff and very bad buildings.
What was the matter with the buildings?
Well, the buildings consisted of a number of old shacks, a piece of the hospital which was diverted to university work, and a couple of churches that had been abandoned from their original purpose. And these were scattered around over a number of square blocks in the hospital area between 12th and 10th Avenues and between Oak and Heather Street, as I recall it.
What did you do as an undergraduate? Can you remember any anecdotes about those days?
I suppose I had about the same variety of experiences as most undergraduates did. I worked at some of my courses and didn't work at others. I took part in a variety of athletic projects. It was our class, for example, that started the Arts 20 relay, a relay race from the university site out in Point Grey to the old site in Fairview, and this went on for 30 or 40 years. Our class on graduation put up a cup for it, and this cup was competed for every year thereafter. In the first race, we managed to get 8 men from our class, although there were in fact only about 20 male graduates in Arts 20, and nearly half of the class had to run in the race. The result was we didn't win it. We did come second, however.
Who were you running again?
All the other classes, including some of the science... I beg your pardon. All the other classes, including some of the science classes. It was won by the freshman, Arts 23.
Was there much rivalry between the different faculties in those days?
Not very much, because we were all working under rather difficult physical circumstances. And also, it was a comparatively small body, so that we were more cohesive than has been the case since that. It wasn't the big mechanized organization that UBC has become now. As a matter of fact, I think that from an educational standpoint, it was far better. We got much more contact with the members, the senior members of the professorial staff, than is common with the ordinary member of the undergraduate groups now.
UBC seems to have been characterized throughout its history with a good academic staff, hasn't it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, UBC made quite a record in the early 20s. This was partly because some of the men who came back from the Army were a little older than would normally be the case and were more serious, and they did very good work. And in addition, as I said earlier on, we had an excellent professorial staff. The result was that for some years in the 20s, UBC won more scholarships from other universities, not only proportionately, but in actual fact, UBC won more scholarships than any other university in Canada.
What kind of a change, excuse me, if any, did you notice when you came back to university in British Columbia to teach?
Well, a great change, of course, was the fact that when I came back in 1925, that was the first year that we were out at Point Grey. And the university was immediately taking on a new character. It was isolated from the community somewhat more than had previously been the case. The facilities were very much better. They weren't, of course, in the same class with the gold-plated institution that we have now, but they're far better than they had been in Fairview. And in general, it had taken on, or was taking on, more of the characteristics of a big institutionalized type of organization.
How long were you there?
No, I was only there for 2 years.
But you've been connected with the university since.
Well, of course, I was away from British Columbia for a great many years and didn't have anything more than an interest in the university during that time. Since coming back, I've been elected to the Senate and have been a member of that body for the last 2 or 3 years.
Would you mind just saying what you were doing when you were away, please?
Well, I went away originally to start in the business world, but after a year of that, I wrote the examinations for external affairs and entered our foreign service and remained in it for 20 years until after the war. Then for 3 or 4 years, I was Deputy Minister of Mines and Resources in Ottawa. I then went to the United Nations as head of the Technical Assistance Program for about 10 years and then came back to BC.
Where was that United Nations? In Geneva?
No, I was at the headquarters in New York.
Wouldn't you say, though, that the University of British Columbia has more than fulfilled the grand plan laid down for it by the original Senate and directors?
I think that the record of UBC has been a very good one. Of course, it's grown enormously in size. That, I suppose, should be considered a good thing from the standpoint of the community as a whole, although I don't think that it's a good thing for the university as such. It has, on the average, I think, given a good quality of training to the people who have gone to it, and it has had a good effect on the community of Vancouver and the community of the province.
How about the world and Canada? How would you say UBC has contributed to that?
Well, I think one of the things that the university has done that's been very beneficial has been the stress that has been placed on offering opportunities for education to people from other parts of the Commonwealth and other parts of the world in general, including perhaps particularly people from the Asian countries.
And can you find any characteristic tone that UBC has that you have noticed that another university might not have?
Over the years, I think that it is correct to say that UBC has had less of the what's known in the United States as university spirit, the rah-rah type of thing. I don't think there has been the great excitement over football games, for example, that results in members of the university classes bursting into tears when their teams lose and that sort of thing, which you do see from time to time in American institutions. Fortunately, I think there's been a minimum of that kind of superheated patriotism in UBC. I think there has, on the whole, been a rather radical spirit in the university here. Generally, I believe, over the years since 1915, the students at UBC have represented a somewhat more liberal, progressive, radical, whatever term you wish to use, than has been the case in most of the institutions in Canada, and certainly far more than most of the institutions of higher learning in the United States. This, to me, is a good thing. At that age, young people should be radical. If they aren't, there's something wrong with them.
What trends do you... can you foresee for university?
Oh, Lord.
Could you? Do you want to ask me?
Obviously, the most immediate development at the university is going to be its tremendous increase in size. I believe that it's on the books that in another 10 years there'll be 25,000 or maybe 30,000 students at the university. This, as I've already indicated, I regret. I think the university is too large now. Unfortunately, with the increasing costs of education, particularly in the scientific disciplines and in the professional schools, it seems to be necessary to concentrate a great many people in one place because you can't afford to reproduce the equipment that is needed by the specialized elements in the educational community in a variety of different places. Next to increase in size, I would hope that we might see an increase in the quality of the instruction, particularly in the first couple of years. This is very difficult, it's very expensive, but it is, I think, a fact that in the earlier years now, the students don't get the kind of contact with the leading members of the faculty, the most important people, the most important element in the whole university community that they should have. Generally, it's not until they get into the third or the fourth year that they see the
senior members of the faculty catching some students playing poker or craps underneath the
community. Along with a change in the organizational arrangements that would make this possible, I would like to see a steadily improving standard of excellence in the work itself. This is something that every university should and most universities do aim at, but I think even more emphasis should be put on it than has been the case in the past. I believe that the present administration of the university is very much aware of this problem and much is being done to prepare the way for a steadily rising standard of quality in the instruction and the training generally.
Can you think of any?
A bunch of platitudes for you.
A rather stern platitudes, though.
Well, I believe them, fortunately. Anyway, the fact that the thing is a platitude doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong.
Can you think of anything amusing that happened when you were a student? Any funny incidents?
Well, I think perhaps the thing that stands out most clearly in the minds of most of us who were there at the time was what took place in 1919. Many of the male members of the student body at that time were returned soldiers, and then for the first time in university history, the administration saw fit to introduce a system of compulsory military training. Well, the returned soldiers didn't want to have anything more to do with military activities, and most of the younger students who were coming on were not very enthusiastic about it either. And so one day when the University Officers Training Corps was on parade near the main arch building, they suddenly found themselves attacked by a hose from the roof of the building. Some of the undergraduates had got up to the top of the building, had taken the fire hose, turned it on, and squirted it on the officers and the prospective officers down below them. They scattered as though it was machine gun fire, and there was, of course, something approaching a riot from then on for about a week, during which threats were made to fire those who were responsible for turning on the hose or for aiming it, and on the other hand, the student body in general wanting to fire the OTC. The result was that the OTC was abandoned.
I guess during the early days it was pretty hard to tell the professors from the students, wasn't it? They were so young.
Don't think really that that's, no, I don't think so.
I think I remember reading something about it in 2MS, which I...
That may be true, but I wouldn't have thought it.
Okay, that's fine.
There have been a number of ways in which I've been fortunate in my connection with the university. I entered in the first class. I came back to teach the first year that it was out at Point Grey. Our eldest daughter was the first child born on the university site in Vancouver, at least after it became the university site. Mary Alice. Her husband is now director of research in the Health Center for Children at the university.
You were also the first PhD in China?
I was the first person to go through the university here during the time that it was UBC and subsequently to obtain a PhD. Of course, the most important thing that happened to me during the years at UBC was the fact that I met the young lady who subsequently became my wife. As a matter of fact, I always claimed that I stayed out for a year during the war in order to wait until she caught up to me in the university classes. We met in a debate, she on one side and I on the other, and it's the only time that I ever won a debate from her. The subject was resolved that life in the Elizabethan era is preferable to life in the present, and I supported Elizabeth I.
And your wife was
Later on, of course, my wife outstripped me in the field of undergraduate activities, becoming the head of the Women's Undergraduate Society and the vice president of the Alma Mater Society. Fortunately, as far as our academic competition was concerned, it worked out all right because I came ahead of her one year, she was ahead of me another year, and the third year we were tied.
Well, she must have been the first woman vice president of the Alma Mater Society.
Second, I think, because she was in the class that started in 16 and graduated in 20. Mm-hmm.